You're listening to The World in My Eyes.
This is Renegade Talk Radio. Renegade Talk Radio.
Hello, Renegade Nation, and welcome back for The World in My Eyes. It has been such a pleasure getting to know everything about you over on Big Trouble in Little Vagina, and I'm so excited that you're here to share all the craziness that goes inside my head. Now, before we get started, as always, I want to remind all of you little listeners out there that if you're searching for some naughtiness on the internet, make sure that you're visiting our sponsor, Adam and Eve Toys. And make sure that you're using the Renegade Listener special code BABE69. That's BABE69. They're going to give you 50% off of one item. And they're going to throw in free shipping, three choice adult movies, and a very special Renegade Listener gift. And I promise you this, the people over at Adam and Eve are going to make sure that they treat you right. So make sure that you head on over there today and pick out something really naughty for yourself. Also, don't forget that the Renegade Talk Radio Network is growing every single day. We've got a brand new website that they're still working some of the kinks out of. Hopefully, I'm not one of the kinks they work out. I'm sorry. So make sure that you got the website bookmarked for us. And make sure that you check out all the other fascinating and provocative shows that we have to offer. You've got Cannabis Talk with Miss Patty Cakes, Queen of the Cannabis. We've got some political insight with the absolutely hilarious Lou Colagiovanni. Deep insight into conspiracies with the brilliant Everly Isby. Entrepreneurship and business with the super savvy Heather Havenwood. And as always, we've got hilarity and hijinks with Richie and our very own Sammy the Sausage Man. And you can also check out my other show, Big Trouble in Little Vagina, where we strive to become better partners, better lovers, and just better people in general. Don't forget, we've got a lot more great talk radio on its way to you. And if you need a break from the talk radio, make sure you check out Sky Pilot, because they've got the most awesome music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I tell you this, between that and listening to talk radio, what else do you have to do? And you don't want to miss what's coming up next, so make sure you've got the website bookmarked. And as always, we've spent so much time getting to know each other very intimately. But just in case you're new, I am the naughty mistress with the mostess, the melodic goddess, and the deviant diva, naughty Nicole Delacroix. And on today's episode of The World in My Eyes, we are looking on how to get out of jail. For free, yes. Get out of jail for free card. That's what I need. Okay, that's a little bit misleading, but today we are going to be focusing on how the justice system looks the other way if you happen to have money and power. And this story, of course, would not be complete if we didn't focus on our presidential hopeful and Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton. Ah, yes, the Clintons, the epitome of, let's not say what they're the epitome of. They have a very long history of circumventing the law and getting away with their crimes. And for some reason, there's not enough media attention on it. So today, I decided we're going to bring up some of their nastier dealings in the hopes that maybe somebody out there finally starts paying attention to all those shady dealings that they do. Now, we're all aware that Hillary was handed yet another get-out-of-free-jail card for her email server scandal. And don't think for a second that that was the first time that the Clintons have proven to be above the law. Even though the FBI announced that Clinton and her staff were extremely careless in the handling of classified information, that they potentially exposed sensitive information to hostile third parties, and lied about turning over all of Clinton's work-related emails, even with all of the piles of evidence stacking up, the FBI declared that no reasonable prosecutor would ever charge Clinton. What the fuck? Okay, maybe he's talking about one that just doesn't want to die. Oh, well, we'll get to that in a minute. Yes, this great Clinton escape comes just shy of a year after Navy reservist Brian Nishimura was sentenced to 2 years probation, had a $7,500 fine, and forced to give up his security clearance and barred from any clearance in the future for a far more modest endangerment of classified materials. What was his crime? Nishimura had used personal mobile devices to download classified briefings. Exactly what Hillary did! Yeah, and she wants to be your fucking president! Like Clinton, the FBI found no malicious intent on the part of Nishimura, who had been deployed twice to Afghanistan. But because he wasn't a Clinton, Nishimura was still successfully prosecuted, stripped of his security clearance, and banned from ever holding such a clearance again. Yeah, that email scandal is just the latest in a long line of slippery incidences in which the Clinton clan has avoided punishment for likely criminal activities. And there's so many of them for us to choose from, but we're going to go ahead and talk about a few of their worst offenses. So we're turning back the dials on our time machine and talking about when the Clintons turned the IRS into their own personal Gestapo. That's right. Few federal agencies are more feared and loathed by us Americans than the Internal Revenue Service, especially when corrupt presidents abuse the power of the IRS to harass and exact revenge on political enemies. That's right. During Bill Clinton's terms in office, IRS audits were conducted against individuals and groups who caused problems for the administration. Several prominent conservative groups found themselves facing IRS audits following their criticism of the president and his policies. Among those conservative groups that were targeted for audits were the Heritage Foundation, the National Rifle Association, Concerned Women of America, Citizens Against Government Waste, National Review, the American Spectator, which, by the way, was burglarized 3 times, the National Center for Public Policy Research, the American Policy Center, American Cause, the Citizens for Honest Government, the Progress and Freedom Foundation, David Horowitz's Center for the Study of Popular Culture, and the Western Journalism Center. Not to be left out, there were individuals that were singled out for audits during the administration, including Clinton's paramours Jennifer Flowers and Liz Ward Grayson, sexual assault accusers Paula Jones and Juanita Broaddrick, fired White House Travel Office Director Billy Dale, and attorney Kent Masters Brown. Fox News' Bill O'Reilly, an outspoken critic of both Bill and Hillary Clinton, said that he was audited 3 times during the Clinton's presidency reign. Yeah, I'm having a problem speaking. I'm a little bit fired up. Sorry. Then, let's talk about covering all of Bill's dirty deeds, and there's oh so many of them. Seriously, somebody just needs a full-time job doing just that. The Clintons have been accused of hiring private investigators to not only dig up dirt on perceived adversaries, such as Juanita Broaddrick, the woman allegedly raped by Bill, and other abused women, such as Jennifer Flowers, Kathleen Wiley, and Paula Jones, but also to stalk, scare, and threaten these women. Wiley asserts that Hillary was behind a campaign of intimidation and harassment against her that fit a pattern employed against numerous other women whose claims of sexual impropriety or assault by Bill Clinton threatened the couple's political fortunes. Wiley and her husband, Ed, were Democratic activists who founded Virginians for Clinton and helped send Bill and Hillary to the White House in 1992. While serving as a volunteer in the White House and facing financial hard times, Wiley says that she met with Bill Clinton in the Oval Office to request a paying position. But instead of getting the help they so needed, she says that she was subjected to nothing short of serious sexual harassment. Distraught, Wiley fled Clinton's presence only to discover that her husband, Ed, had committed suicide that same tragic afternoon. Later, she was drawn unwillingly into the Paula Jones lawsuit, the Kinstar investigation, and the impeachment proceedings. Wiley, who authored a book in 2007 called Target, Caught in the Crosshairs of Bill and Hillary Clinton, claimed that the Clinton tag team used mob-style intimidation campaign to keep her silent, even purportedly breaking into her home to steal her memoirs of the events. Despite Bill's 20 years of alleged and admitted extramarital relationships, Hillary famously came to his defense shortly after the Monica Lewinsky affair broke in 1998. Asked about the accusations, the then First Lady said, "Certainly I believe they're false, absolutely." Yeah, apparently she was lying to herself at that point. Then, in a memorable interview with the Today Show's Matt Lauer, she explained years of accusations by women such as Wiley Jennifer Flowers and Dolly Kyle Browning, and she quotes, "Bill and I have been accused of everything, including murder, by some of the very same people who are behind these allegations," pointing out that this was a vast right-wing conspiracy. So from her perspective, this is part of a continuing political campaign against her and her husband. Later, when placed under oath, Bill Clinton finally admitted to the affair with Flowers, as he did with Miss Lewinsky. But Hillary's actions, Wiley contends, indicated by word and deed that her main concern was to ensure her husband's proclivities didn't ruin their political careers. Then we go on to Vince Foster's 1993 death. Vince Foster, if you don't remember, was deputy White House counsel and a good friend of Hillary Clinton, and also a law partner who had connections to the Travelgate and Whitewater scandals. In 1993, Foster was found dead in a park with a fatal gunshot wound to his mouth. His suicide was the subject of much speculation and three official investigations. Investigations by the U.S. Park Police, the Department of Justice, the FBI, Congress, Independent Counsel Robert B. Fisk, and Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr concluded that Foster's death was a suicide. However, one of Starr's key investigators challenged the official line, insisting the probe's result was predetermined. Only a few plotters were required to engineer the result. The crime scene was altered, and that major newspaper editors killed stories by reporters pursuing the truth. The Washington Post reported that federal investigators were not allowed to enter Foster's office after his death, but, quote, "White House aides entered Foster's office shortly after his death, giving rise to speculation that files were removed from the office." In his 2005 book, The Truth About Hillary, What She Knew, When She Knew It, and How Far She'll Go to Become President, Edward Klein wrote of Hillary's involvement in the effort to remove Foster's file. And I quote from directly from the book. "The night of Foster's death, Hillary launched one of the most shameful and illegal cover-ups in her entire career. She sent two of her most trusted White House loyalists, Maggie Williams, the First Lady's Chief of Staff, and Patty Thomason, who was in charge of White House administration, into Foster's office to retrieve embarrassing and incriminating documents related to Whitewater and Hillary's other personal affairs. While White House counsel Bernard Nussbaum barred investigators from entering Foster's office, Maggie Williams, Patty Thomason, and Craig Livingston, Hillary's director of White House security, removed armloads of files and loose-leaf binders. In addition, a White House staffer allegedly tampered with the titles of several memos and removed the First Lady's initials in an effort to erase her role in improper behavior. Shame, 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 shame. And lastly, let's talk about Whitewater. Oh, yes. Because it's jail time for your friends, but not for the Clintons. The Whitewater investigation by Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr began in 1994, with accusations of impropriety against the Clintons and others concerning improper campaign contributions, political and financial favors, and tax benefits. Its initial subject was a failed Arkansas real estate venture involving the Clintons in the 1980s that was linked to the collapse of Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, a Little Rock savings bank run by the Clintons' Whitewater business partners. Clinton friends James and Susan McDougal went to jail for fraud. By the way, James died while serving his sentence, as did former Arkansas Governor Jim Tucker and municipal judges David Hale and Eugene Fitzhugh. The probe eventually expanded to include the death of Deputy White House Counsel Vincent Foster, the dismissal of White House travel office employees, receipt by the White House of a number of FBI files, and the issue of whether President Clinton lied or obstructed justice to hide an affair with White House intern Monica Lewinsky. All right, my dear listeners, we're just getting started, and I promise you we have a few more to go over when we get back from our break. But we do have to take a moment, visit our sponsors, maybe check out a little bit of music. Remember, you're listening to The World in My Eyes. I am still Naughty Nicole, and this is still Renegade Talk Radio, so meet me back here after the break.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type BABE69 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code BABE69 at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, Renegade Nation. If you're just tuning in, well, this is still The World in My Eyes, and I am still very, very naughty Nicole. And today, we are talking about how you too can be above the law and avoid jail time, just like the rich and powerful. Now, if you're anything like me, you know, not so rich and not so powerful, then make sure you visit our sponsor, Adam and Eve Toys. Because they have a vast selection of adult toys, movies, and oh so much more. And I promise you this, they will not break your budget. So if you're looking for something special, head on over to Adam and Eve Toys. They will treat you right and not for a lot of bucks. Make sure that you're using our special code for Renegade Only listeners, BABE69. That's BABE69. They're going to throw in 3 free movies. They're going to give you half off on it and on one item. And they're going to throw in free shipping and a very special Renegade Only listener gift. All right, so let's jump right back into our countdown of all the Clintons' misdeeds and misdoings. Doesn't it sound like it's almost a Christmas episode? Maybe not. Where we left off, we were talking about the Clinton body count. Oh, but there's so much more to the Clinton body count, because I promise you this. You will see dead people. You will. I promise. The Clinton body count is a collection of names of people that have been associated with the Clinton administration scandals who have either died mysteriously or have died a very violent death. Reporter David Bresnahan broke the story of the list during the summer of 1997 when he was researching his book, Cover Up, The Art and Science of Political Deception. Bresnahan said, and I quote, "I started looking into all the various deaths of people that were involved in various Clinton scandals. I started to investigate the entire picture instead of just one focused event. Nobody out there was putting it all together. If you looked at one scandal, you'll find one dead guy. Nothing big. When you investigate all the Clinton scandals, though, you find similarities. You find common tactics, and you find common actions, and you most definitely find dead people." The list was not just a source of terror among sworn enemies of the administration. No. It was an even greater terror for those that were close to the Clintons. Because, for some reason, those closest, they at least it appeared, died younger and more inexplicably than those that were on the outside looking in. In his research, though, Bresnahan came up with more than just one list. He said, "Not only did I find a list of dead people, but I found also that there was a list of over 100 people who absolutely refused to testify." He said, "There's also a list of people who've gone to jail. There are 45 people or so who've gone to jail, some of them White House staff, cabinet members as well, as people from the Justice Department. So many of these lists developed that I had to really start looking at the bigger picture." So in talking about that, let's talk about Hillary's law career. And probably one of the things that makes me despise this woman so much is that she laughed about defending a child rapist. Yeah, she explained that her defense of a child rape suspect as just part of her job. But she really hasn't explained why she was laughing about him passing a lie detector test, which essentially destroyed her faith in such evaluations. According to her own words, she said, "Once I was appointed, I fulfilled that obligation." Now, this was in an interview with Mumsnet, which is a UK community of parents providing and sharing information on a variety of subjects and issues. In the video, she's asked, "As a lawyer, you defended the rapist of a 12-year-old girl, calling the victim emotionally unstable, and saying that girls have a tendency to exaggerate or romanticize sexual experiences, especially when they come from disorganized families." Clinton said, and I quote, "When I was a 27-year-old attorney doing legal aid work at the law school where I taught in Fayetteville, Arkansas, I was appointed by the local judge to represent a criminal defendant accused of rape. I asked to be relieved of that responsibility, but I was not, and I had a professional duty to represent my client to the best of my ability, which I did." He later pled guilty to a lesser included offense. When you're a lawyer, you often don't have the choice as to who you will represent. And by the very nature of criminal law, there will be those who you represent you don't approve of. But at least in our system, you have an obligation, and once I was appointed, I fulfilled that obligation. Here's the thing, though. She never really did address the reports of those unearthed recordings in which she almost boasts of knowing of her client's guilt and laughing about the case. The tapes reveal her discussing the case of Thomas Alfred Taylor, who was then 41, who was accused of raping a 12-year-old in Springdale, Arkansas on May 10th in 1975. As she said on the tape, "It was a fascinating case, and it was a very interesting case. This guy was accused of raping a 12-year-old. Of course, he claimed that he didn't, and all this stuff. I had him take a polygraph, which he passed, which forever destroyed my faith in polygraphs." And she laughed at that statement. Now, the Washington Free Beacon report on the recordings also confirmed that she was laughing several other times while discussing the case, including when discussing the crime lab's accidental destruction of DNA evidence that tied Taylor to the crime. Published profiles of the case reveal that Clinton's strategy at the time was to attack the 12-year-old. She submitted an affidavit that said she was told the girl was emotionally unstable and was viewed as having a tendency to seek out older men and engage in fantasizing. She claimed the child in the past had made false accusations, and she exhibited an unusual stubbornness and temper when she doesn't get her way. Interesting. I wonder if she would say the same thing about her own daughter. The woman who says that she was raped by the defendant blasted Hillary in 2014, accusing her of intentionally lying about her in court documents. As she said to the Daily Beast, "Hillary Clinton took me through hell." Do we really want Hillary Clinton to take us through hell? Let's talk about some more dead people. How about Benghazi? Yeah, you knew it was coming. Because on September 11, 2012, while Hillary was Secretary of State, Islamic militants attacked a U.S. special mission in Benghazi, Libya, and murdered U.S. Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens and U.S. Foreign Service Information Management Officer Sean Smith. Two CIA contractors, Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty, were also killed. In the months leading up to the attack, Hillary's State Department cut security in Libya. Senator Ron Johnson, a Republican from Wisconsin, accused Hillary of dereliction of duty that led to the deaths of the four Americans. As he wrote in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, "The State Department not only failed to honor repeated requests for additional security, but instead actually reduced security in Libya. Although no one can say with certainty, I firmly believe a relatively small contingent of armed military guards would have prevented the attack, and those four lives would not have been lost." A security decision finalized personally by Hillary may have unwittingly doomed the Americans in Benghazi. Hillary herself signed waivers that allowed the facility to be legally occupied since it did not meet the minimum official security standards set by the State Department. The waiver legally allowed the CIA annex to be housed in a location about 1 mile from the U.S. special mission. According to accounts from Benghazi survivors, the delayed response time by those at the CIA annex may have cost the lives of Stevens and the three other Americans killed at the special mission. If the CIA annex had been co-located with the U.S. Special Mission, a rapid response team would have been on site during the initial assault in which Stevens was killed. Clinton's waiver, however, allowed the CIA annex to be housed at a separate location. State Department emails show Clinton knew while the attack was underway that it was being carried out by terrorists. Judicial Watch had obtained previously classified documents from the U.S. Department of Defense and the Department of State revealing that DOD almost immediately reported that the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, was planned and carried out by al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood-linked terrorists. A federal court ordered the government hand over more than 100 pages of previously secret documents that showed then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and other senior abominable officials were given reports within hours of the attack. In those memos, the DOD described details of a plan 10 days in advance to kill as many Americans as possible. Nonetheless, Hillary blamed it on rage and violence over an awful internet video when she spoke at a ceremony at Andrews Air Force Base on the 14th, as the remains of the four Americans were returned to the United States. To this day, Representative Trey Gowdy, a Republican from South Carolina, says that the State Department has failed to comply with requests for information about Benghazi. Now let's move on to my absolute favorite story about the Clintons, and probably one that we should take to heart. Everybody remembers Watergate. Yeah, bunch of liars, people breaking into shit, bunch of criminals. Did you know that Hillary actually played a role in the Watergate saga? Yes, her actions as a young attorney may have actually set the tone for her career. The then 27-year-old Clinton was fired from the staff of the House Judiciary Committee investigating the Watergate scandal in 1974. She was fired by her supervisor, lifelong Democrat Jerry Ziefman, who called her a liar and much worse. As he said, and I quote, "She was an unethical, dishonest lawyer. She conspired to violate the Constitution, the rules of the House, the rules of the committee, and the rules of confidentiality." Ziefman also refused to give Clinton a letter of recommendation, making her one of only three employees that he ever snubbed during his 17-year career. Think about that, Renegade Nation. Now, I know we've been talking a lot about it, and a few weeks ago, Julian Assange of WikiLeaks told the world that he had incriminating information that could further damage Hillary Clinton's chances at the presidency. The DNC leaks, realized by hacker Guccifer 2.0, have already brought tremendous embarrassment and added scrutiny to the DNC, which has since struggled to recuperate popular legitimacy. The DNC, in an effort to divert attention from its criminal actions, has sought to refocus public attention on Russia. Yeah. In an official statement, the DNC claimed to be the victim of a crime, an illegal cyber attack by Russian state-sponsored agents who seek to harm the Democratic Party and progressive groups in an effort to influence the presidential election. Are you fucking kidding me? Other hacks that have also cast U.S. institutions in a bad light have similarly. They've been blamed on Russia despite a lack of evidence. The Russian government has also officially denied involvement. However, since propaganda is now legal in the United States, the fact that there is no factual basis to blame Russia suggests that the DNC is just using its same old dirty tricks that could now inflame a new Cold War to keep unwanted attention from its own actions. For those of you that are interested, the files, the source of the leak, was all but confirmed by WikiLeaks to have been a DNC insider and not a Russian operative. An insider from WikiLeaks, Seth Rich, was shot and murdered in a senseless crime that many suspect was a politically motivated homicide. And there was also a murder of a WikiLeaks lawyer that followed a few days after that. If you're interested, though, the files can be downloaded from WikiLeaks for those that are so inclined to read them. And that new leak? Well, it shows that the highest-paying donors of the DNC were later rewarded with ambassadorships and other federal positions by President Obama in return for their donations. In one example, Associate Attorney General Tony West donated $1 million the same day he was hired. In another example, Julius Grinichowski donated nearly $3.5 million and was later granted the position of FCC chairman from 2009 to 2013. Unfortunately, these leaks do reveal a pay-to-play scheme so widespread that it is essentially a black market for the buying and selling of political influence and U.S. assets. The scheme was so out of control that the DNC went so far as to call their own donors clowns. Another email from Organizing for America, formerly Obama for America, references the pay-to-play scheme directly in asking to handle how to handle pay-to-play donations most effectively. DNC emails also acknowledge that the DNC believes that Hillary and Obama were responsible for the creation of the Islamic State, ISIS. The leaks will also likely cause further damage to the Clinton campaign as well. A 2013 email between Hillary and her aides was included in the leaks. The email, which you can read on WikiLeaks, implies that the presidential hopeful has a serious health condition called cavernous sinus thrombosis. Now, according to WebMD, because, you know, I had to look that shit up, the condition is rare and life-threatening, causing death in about 30% of its cases. Those who express concerns regarding Clinton's health may be vindicated by these as well as upcoming leaks. The leaks will also likely reopen the Benghazi controversy, an ongoing headache for the Clintons, as Huma Abedin, one of Clinton's closest aides, gave Clinton credit in a private email for inspiring the protest that saw the four Americans killed. This may weaken Clinton's claim that the protests were inspired by an anti-Islamic video. The amount of corruption exposed by the second Guccifer 2.0 release is truly astounding. However, WikiLeaks claims that there's still more to come, and if that doesn't make you want to just cry, I don't know what will. Because they also have evidence that Bernie Sanders was threatened to relinquish his candidacy in favor of Clinton. If WikiLeaks does indeed have more information, even more incriminating than what it's already released, it begs to question if more mysterious deaths will follow this round of leaks, or if something bigger may be in the works to distract the public from the exposed corruption. All right, my precious listeners, it's that time again, and we need to visit our sponsors, and I need to scream. So take a moment, check out what they have to offer, and meet me back here after the break. I'm Naughty Nicole. You're listening to A World in My Eyes here on Renegade Talk Radio.
We don't sugarcoat shit. This is Renegade Talk Radio. Renegade Talk
Radio. Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive three free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type BABE69 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get three free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code BABE69 at adamandeve.com.
Welcome back, Renegade Nation. Now my throat hurts because I had to scream while we were on break. And if you're just tuning in, well, this is still The World in My Eyes, and I am still Naughty Nicole. And I hope that during the break that you took a little time to visit our sponsor, Adam and Eve Toys. And I hope you checked out the wide selection of adult toys, movies, and oh so much more that they have. If you're looking for something special, make sure you head on over to Adam and Eve Toys today, because they will treat you right. Not like how our presidential nominees treat us. Today, we've been talking about, well, how to get away with, well, pretty much anything, if you're rich, powerful, privileged, and running for the president. But, you know me, I always have to try and do something a little bit different on that last episode, or the last segment. And now I've got a couple of stories about people who are trying to make a difference in this world, but unfortunately they're not rich and powerful or privileged, so they didn't really get away with shit. So, we're going to talk about that for a minute. And it's so strange to me that we live in a world that sees criminals that are sentenced to less prison time than those who actually expose the crimes. But I guess that's the world that we live in now. We're going to be talking about anonymous vigilante hacktivist Derek Lostutter, who hacked into the Steubenville High School sports fan website to reveal incriminating evidence against two student rapists. He now faces 16 years in prison. That's right, 16 years. Now, the students, Trent Mays and Malik Richmond, who were actually found guilty of raping an unconscious 16-year-old girl. Yeah, I know this is going to sound very familiar. You know what? They served 2 years and 10 months, respectively. Hey, maybe if they'd learned to swim, they'd only get 6 months. Now, their crime took place back in August of 2012. The rape, which had been broadcast on social media, provoked a national debate over rape culture that has only intensified over the past few months because of, hey, the 3-month prison sentence to that dickhead Stanford rapist, Brock Turner. Well, the hack secured crucial evidence that helped to convict Mays and Richmond, but what NightSec leader KY Anonymous, Lostutter, and fellow hacker Noah McHugh revealed was that there had also been a massive cover-up of the crime. Steubenville coaches, school administrators, and even prosecutors were implicated in the cover-up. Instead of saluting Lostutter, who, by accessing the school site, RollRedRoll.com, secured the convictions, the government thought it better send a statement to other hackers, which now seems to be the de facto federal response to any information leak. The FBI raided Lostutter's home and, shortly afterwards, arrested him and indicted him on 4 counts. 3 counts of unauthorized access to a computer used for privacy breach and libel, and 1 count of making a false statement to the FBI. So how does that yield a 16-year sentence, you ask? Well, Lostutter's lawyer, Tor Eklund, says that it was made possible by a cybercrime law from 1986, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, or CFAA. The law has gained far more power in the digital age than anybody could have ever imagined back in 1986. It gives prosecutors a really, really powerful tool for punishing people who really haven't done much or did the equivalent of basically spray painting the front of a building. Now, this was according to Eklund, who has been one of the most vocal opponents of the CFAA. Anything having to do with Anonymous scares the living hell out of the United States government. It's a digital war, so to speak, about who gets to control the information. This means, in some twisted interpretation of jurisprudence, that hacking into a website is a worse crime than rape. Yeah, okay, that sounds about like the U.S. government. Eklund sums it up in the following way. You get 16 years for forcibly entering your way into a computer, but you get 1 year for forcibly entering your way into a woman. I think that's the precedent that the government is setting here. The timing of this case is disturbingly serendipitous, given that the U.S. government is, in fact, using that exact same logic on a larger scale against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. The State Department and its loyal mainstream media outlets swiftly created a diversionary narrative of Russian espionage in order to cover up the DNC, which have exposed massive corruption. The blatant PSYOP appears to be working as the media continues to give more airtime to a Cold War-era conspiracy theory than leaked proof of rigged primaries and pay-for-play schemes within the Clinton Foundation. The ongoing war on whistleblowers, leaks, hacks, and essentially the truth has taken a frightening turn. It appears exposing a crime is a worse offense than the actual crime itself. And let's talk about one of my most favorite people on the face of the planet, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. And he revealed that America's National Security Agency, the NSA, is using a British military base to carry out capture-kill operations across the Middle East. Yes, he revealed that the U.S. spying agency has been using a U.K. base in Minwith Hall in Yorkshire to conduct missions that were published by The Intercept. The documents show that secretive NSA kill capture operations in the Middle East have been developed and initiated from inside the base's heavily guarded perimeter wire. The programs, which carry names like Ghost Wolf and Ghost Hunter, have been used to support conventional operations in war zones such as Afghanistan and Yemen, with which neither Britain nor the U.S. is officially at war. In July, the abominable administration revealed that somewhere between 64 and 116 civilian casualties were inflicted by U.S. airstrikes outside Afghanistan and Iraq in the years 2009 through 2015. While Washington didn't specify where exactly those deadly strikes took place, they're believed to have been carried out in Yemen, Pakistan, and North Africa. But those release of those figures touted by Obama as a step towards a more transparent nation was criticized by various human rights organizations as distorting the actual picture. According to independent assessments, anywhere from 200 to 1,000 civilians fell victim to U.S. air campaigns. The leaks also call into question claims about U.K. complicity in deadly drone strikes carried out using the intelligence base. In the past, Britain claimed to have full knowledge and have given full consent for what goes on at Minwith Hall, despite claims of campaigners and that clandestine U.S. operations may constitute war crimes. The latest revelations have been criticized by human rights groups, including Reprieve. That organization's top lawyer, Kat Craig, told The Intercept on Tuesday this was yet another example of the unacceptable level of secrecy that surrounds UK involvement in the US targeted killing program. It's now imperative that the Prime Minister come clean about UK involvement in targeted killing to ensure that British personnel and resources are not implicated in illegal and immoral activities. While the Ministry of Defense refused to comment on the release, an approach by The Intercept to the NSA was referred to the Director of National Intelligence. That's a quagmire you don't want to get into. DNI spokesman Richard Colco told the website, "The men and women serving the intelligence community safeguard U.S. national security by collecting information, conducting analysis, and providing intelligence for informed decision-making under a strict set of laws, policies, and guidelines. The mission protects our nation and others around the world." If that is not the biggest fucking band-aid that makes no fucking sense, I don't know what is. In April 2012, the covert Minwith Hill Intelligence Center was propelled into the public spotlight after local residents joined by the members of the Occupy movement. Together, they staged a mass protest outside the base. The UK's providing a facility that's involved in drone attacks that they know of. From independent assessments, they're killing and injuring thousands of civilians, and because of the covert nature of that warfare, it's very difficult to provide information and accountability through the UK Parliament. And yet, these are acts of war. Matteo Bergamini, founder director of Shoutout UK platform, believes that the UK government should give an explicit account to the public on what's actually going on in the clandestine facility. Authorities need to come clean, to say what's happened, and essentially put it to the public and actually start to act like a democracy. However, the chances of that actually taking place is going to be pretty fucking low. Sorry, guys. The truth of the matter is, it's not going to happen. And, my friends, that just goes to show that if you're rich and powerful, you can pretty much do and say whatever you want. And if you're trying to do something good, well, you're going to go to jail, or you're never going to be able to set foot back into your own country. And with that, we've come to the end of the episode. And I thank you for joining me today. Maybe you learned a little something, or maybe you'll just like listening to me talk and hearing the voices in my head take control for a little bit. If you did, don't hesitate to let me know. You can find me at my website, www.nicole-delacroix.com, or on Twitter at @NicoleDelacroix. And if you're enjoying listening to me, which I know you are, because you're still listening, then make sure you pick up a copy of my book, Sexual Confessional, Confidential Admissions from Social Media. It's available on Amazon.com and all other major booksellers. That's our time, and I want to thank you for joining me here today on Renegade Talk Radio. And don't forget to tune in next time. Until then, remember, it's not really the lie that bothers me. No, it's the insult to my intelligence that I find so offensive. See you next time, my precious little heathens.
We don't sugarcoat shit. This is Renegade Talk Radio. Renegade Talk Radio.